So today is Palm Sunday, and because it's the week before Jesus is arrested and then crucified, it was that day that Jesus entered Jerusalem on the back of a young donkey, and a crowd of people were waving palm branches, and they were shouting, "Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the King of Israel." Though today is Palm Sunday, our message is not going to come from Palm Sunday. Our message is more about Good Friday, so we're kind of fast-forwarding to that. We are in this series called Confessions of Christ, and in the Gospels, there are various people who make different confessions about who Jesus was in their view, and each with a different situation surrounding their declaration. There's a different background, a different story leading up to their statement about Christ. And so we're going to be looking in this series at seven different confession stories during this Easter series, exploring the situation and the people that are involved in that confession, that statement. And then we're going to be asking in every one of the sermons, what does this mean to us today? And so last week we started this, and I think it's going to be a very poignant series. A lot of introspective questions, especially today. So today we're talking about the exchange between the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate, and the Jewish leaders and Jesus. And the eventual confession, if we want to call it that, when we get there, of Pontius Pilate. So the account of Jesus, actually if you want to go on and turn there or go there in your phone or your tablet. Sometimes I jump around with different scriptures, and it's kind of hard to follow along, but today we'll be in John 18. We'll take off in 18. We'll land in 19. So if you want to be able to take notes or highlight or whatever, you guys can open your Bibles or your devices, go on to YouVersion and use that, John chapter 18. So the account of Jesus being brought before Pilate, it occurs in all four Gospels. We're going to the Gospel of John because there's a little more detail involved there, a little more behind the scenes, a little more back and forth. What we're going to do is we're going to walk through this passage. It's a lengthy passage. And just kind of take some mental notes on it. Then we're going to actually take some physical notes there in your bulletin. So you can kind of set your bulletin to the side and just have your Bible or your phone or tablet or whatever you have your Bible on. I haven't used my paper Bible, and I don't know how long. So I've got a Bible on this. I've got a Bible on this. I've got a Bible on my computer. So I love that, the digital age. So leading up to this scene with Pilate, Jesus has been betrayed by Judas in the garden and arrested. And then he's been brought before the Sanhedrin, a Jewish ruling council. That's like the Jewish court of law for their religious side of things, where Caiaphas resided as the high priest. And so in verse 28 of chapter 18 of John, we read, "Then the Jewish leaders took Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor." The Roman governor was Pontius Pilate. There are a couple of first century historians outside of the Bible that talk about Pilate, and they agree about the way that he was, his personality, that he was a brutal and an arrogant ruler, that he ruled with power and control rather than tact and diplomacy. John continues, he says, "By now it was early in the morning, and to avoid ceremonial uncleanliness, they did not enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and asked, 'What charges are you bringing against this man?' 'If he were not a criminal,' they replied, 'we would not have handed him over to you.' Pilate said, 'Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law.' 'But we have no right to execute anyone,' they objected. This took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about the kind of death that he was going to die." There is some debate over the Jews' claim that they were not able to execute someone. This didn't seem to bother them in the Gospels when they bring the woman who was caught in adultery to Jesus. A mob full of stone-wielding people that were willing to stone her on the spot. They didn't seek Roman assistance for that execution. You fast forward past this in the book of Acts, you have the just glaring example of the stoning of Stephen in Acts chapter 7. They didn't seek Roman assistance there. What the issue was, it wasn't that they weren't allowed to execute someone. They weren't allowed to execute them on the basis of the charge they wanted against Jesus. They didn't want this to just be a religious issue. They wanted this to be a political issue. They wanted to elevate it And so John notes that this took place to fulfill the type of death that Jesus was going to die. If the Jews would have been in charge of executing Jesus, it would have been through stoning Jesus. But they wanted crucifixion, and crucifixion was the form of execution that was used by the Roman government. So Pilate went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" This is an important question for Pilate. And I'll kind of pause here just for a second just to let you know, there is a lot of things in this these verses that we're reading today that could be studied. And so I'm honing in and being very focused, which is not super easy for me sometimes, especially when I've got a biblical text so rich in things that could be taught. But we're really trying to focus in right on Pilate today and look at him. So if we come across something, you're like, why is he not talking about that? We'll get that some other time, or we've already covered it some other time. Today is going to be about Pilate. So this question, it's an important question for Pilate, because the Jews were not allowed to have a king. And so for them to say that he's the king of the Jews, this was an issue. If Jesus were called the king of the Jews, then this could be the beginning of a revolt against the Roman government, and this would be a problem. Pilate had superiors that he answered to, and he would not be treated kindly at all if it was found out that Pilate had someone who was called the king of the Jews and he did nothing about it, nothing to stop it. And so this was an issue for Pilate. Jesus, he says, is that your own idea, Jesus asked, or did others talk to you about me? Am I a Jew? Pilate replied. Pilate's response is derogatory. We might not catch that as we read through this. But the relation the Romans had with the Jews, this was a derogatory term. I'm a Roman. Am I a Jew? Why would I be involved in your stuff? I'm above that. I wouldn't associate myself with your people. Am I a Jew? Stubborn, uncultured people. You can just hear Pilate's arrogance dripping off this statement. So, continues, your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it you have done? It is clear that Pilate doesn't want to be involved in this Jewish dispute, but he's been involved now. They've involved him, and now it's become a Roman issue. And so Pilate offers Jesus the opportunity to share his side of the story. Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place. You are a king then, said Pilate. So Jesus shares that he has no desire to be a political ruler. He has no political agenda. He has no desire, no interest in causing a revolution. If he were, Jesus cites the facts. If this were the case, wouldn't my arrest have, triggered a revolution? Wouldn't people have, they've come out of the bushes? But that hasn't happened. So obviously this is not my agenda. This is not what's going on here. Pilate understands that Jesus' claim to be king is not based on some desire to be a political ruler, but it's more in some sort of philosophical, some sort of religious, some sort of something that has nothing to do with Pilate. And this would be a threat to the religious leaders of their time, the Jewish religious leaders, but it was no threat to Pilate or to the Roman government. So Jesus answered, he says, you say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into this world, into the world, is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. Now, Jesus as the truth is a thread that you see all through John's gospel, as you read John's gospel. And I encourage you to do that. Every so often, grab one of the Gospels and just pick some time, pick a couple of days or a day, a good hunk of time in a day, and just read the whole Gospel in its entirety. Something happens when you do that. Those of us who have done that, it's a really neat experience to do that. I want to encourage you to do that. But as you would read through John's Gospel, you would notice that truth, Jesus being the truth, is a thread that's woven throughout. Just some of the highlights, at the very beginning of his Gospel, he says Jesus came full of grace and truth. A third of the way through in John 8, he says the truth will set you free, talking about the power of the truth. Then you go a little further, and in John 14, and we have Jesus' declaration, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So not only is the truth a thread through that, but John's wanting us to see truth is not a what, it's a who. Jesus is the truth. He himself is the truth. And the reader of this gospel, anyone reading through this gospel, our ears would perk up at this part of the conversation. And we would definitely perk up at Pilate's question, what is truth? Retorted Pilate. And we know the question's not what is truth, it's who is truth? Pilate's question serves as a checkpoint for those that are reading through and in the grand scheme of John's gospel. And we should perk up, not only because we know the correct question to ask, but because we know the answer. It's been very clear throughout the gospel, and this is a checkpoint for John as he's concluding this story of sharing the story of Jesus. Remember who truth is. You know the answer. Truth is Jesus. And so Pilate says, what is truth? And Pilate's disdain is felt so much that he doesn't even let Jesus answer. I so badly want a Jack Nicholson response there, you know? You can't handle the truth, you know, just because he can't, you know? It's bigger than he is. It's more than he can. But he doesn't even let Jesus respond. And it's, you can just see that arrogance there in that. What is truth, retorted Pilate. With that, he went out again to the Jews and gathered there and said, I find no basis for a charge against him. But it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews? Pilate is unwilling to have a trial because it's not worth getting his hands dirty over. This is not worth him getting mixed up into this. Jesus poses no political threat to him. Therefore, Pilate, he's uninterested in truth. He's uninterested in justice. It doesn't affect him. And so he has no desire to continue. So Pilate offers a way out, releasing Jesus as the customary Passover pardon, if we can use that term. That would be a win-win-win in Pilate's eyes. I mean, the Jews would walk away with the satisfaction that Jesus was pronounced guilty, because a pardon doesn't say he's innocent. A pardon says he's guilty, but we're going to let him free. So the Jews would be able to walk away, and they wouldn't have their pride cut into, that the pride of the accusers would be satisfied by a pardon because it would admit that he was guilty. Pilate would be able to avoid a messy connection to this incident, and Jesus would be able to escape execution. They shouted back, no, not him. Give us Barabbas. Now Barabbas had taken part in an uprising. According to Luke's gospel, it's around this time in this back and forth that Pilate sends Jesus to Herod because he learns that Jesus was a Galilean and therefore he would be under Herod's jurisdiction and not his jurisdiction down there in Jerusalem. So through the whole, and so he sends him to Herod, and this whole thing to Herod is more like a game. It's more like entertainment to him. Here's Jesus, and Herod's excited. Maybe he's going to do something for me. Maybe I'm going to see a miracle or, you know, fireworks or whatever, you know. He's getting out the jugs of water, you know. Let's see if he can do that again. And so Jesus gets there, and that doesn't happen. There's mocking and beating. It's more entertainment for Herod. And so he returns Jesus to Pilate. And Pilate still tries to dodge responsibility here. He doesn't want to be responsible for Jesus' death. So since his effort to release Jesus during the Passover pardon didn't work, his effort to try and pass things over to Herod didn't work, he next tries to appease the angry crowd by having Jesus flogged. Then Pilate took Jesus, this is in chapter 19 now, then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe, and they went up to him again and again, saying, Hail, King of the Jews, and they slapped him in the face. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews gathered there, Look, I'm bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him. When Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, Here is the man. It's not said whether Pilate gave them instructions to dress him as a king or if this was just the simple cruelty of the soldiers that were tasked with flogging him. Regardless of whose idea it came from, Pilate uses Jesus' appearance to his arrogant benefit. Here's the one you call king. Look, I can do whatever I want to with him. He's no threat to my authority. He's no threat to my power. Here's the man. As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify, crucify." But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." And some of the things we see in here, like, you know, "Am I a Jew?" We wouldn't see that as, you know, a derogatory statement. Or even this, he's taunting them. This is a taunt from a Roman to the Jews. Crucifixion was the Roman way of execution. They were masters of the trade. They had made it into a science. It was an art form to them. They took a lot of pride in their ability to elongate the pain and the torture. It was one of the most, if not the most, inhumane and painful forms of execution in all of history. It wasn't just physical, it was psychological, it was emotional torture as well. So Pilate says, "You want to crucify him? You? Jews? What's the best you got? You guys throw rocks at people to kill him. Sure, go for it. Have at it. If you want to crucify him, be my guest." It's an arrogant taunt. You want to crucify him? You do it. The Jewish leaders insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God." When Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid. So here we get a slight chance to view into a little bit of the inside of Pilate's emotional condition here. He had some fear, and now the fear is elevated. He's even more afraid. And he's more afraid because he hears this escalated title given to Jesus. He's not just the king of the Jews, but he's the Son of God. And history was not to be ignored. It wasn't something that people just kind of passed the old, you know, all of the events that happened with the Israelites and their God. It was fresh in the minds of people in history. And when you get God involved with his people, then it's an uh-oh. Then it's a, okay, we don't want to mess with the Jews when their God's involved, because bad things happen for those who are in opposition to that. Pilate is now worried that he's gotten himself in over his head, that he's messing with things that he doesn't fully understand. So he went back inside the palace. "Where do you come from?" he asked Jesus. But Jesus gave him no answer. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Here we see that arrogance coming back out. Pilate said, "Don't you realize that I have power to either free you or crucify you?" I love Jesus' response. Jesus answered, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free. Jesus isn't pardoning him. He's still guilty of this. He still has responsibility in this. But the Jews who handed him over, their guilt is greater. They're guilty of a greater sin. But the Jewish leaders kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you're no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." These are career-ruining accusations for Pilate. Career-ruining accusations. Pilate was in a position that would require great personal sacrifice to stand on his newfound convictions about Jesus, regardless of how heavy or strong or light they are. It would cause him a great deal of personal sacrifice to stand on any of those convictions he might have. When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at a place known as a stone pavement, which is in Aramaic is Gabbatha. Pilate now steps into his role as the governor, as the ruling authority, as the judge. When he takes his place in the judge's seat, from that seat, anything that he says then is legally binding. It was the day of Passover, or it was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about noon, John records. "Here's your king," Pilate said to the Jews, but they shouted, "Take him away, take him away, crucify him." "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priests answered. Wow. Let me stay focused. That's just powerful, though. If Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. So let's take some notes on this section. I'm going to pull your notes out. And I want to send you home with these notes. And I really want you to really have some introspection here. These are some pretty powerful observations and questions that we can get from this. First of all, Pilate painted himself into a character corner. Pilate's choices prior to this event set him up to side with the crowd instead of convictions. He had a choice to stand on convictions or a choice to stand with the crowd. And his choice was mostly made up by the corner that he had painted himself into. How many of you guys have heard that statement, painting yourself in a corner? Okay. And that's, I mean, it would be best illustrated if you were painting a concrete floor. And you just paint, and then you end up in a corner, and the door is way over there, and between you and the door is wet paint. You're stuck. You've painted yourself into a corner, and this is what Pilate had done. He'd painted himself into a character corner. Let's write this down. There's no such thing as instant character. Character is developed over time. To change his position at this point was not likely. Why? Because of the character corner he had painted himself into. He would have had to make some major changes instantly with a great deal of self-sacrifice, and that wasn't going to happen. Instant character, there's no such thing as that. Characters developed over time. Pilate wasn't going to just change his position instantly. His attitude as an arrogant leader had been developed over time. His position in the Roman hierarchy had been developed over time. And this interaction with the Jewish leaders and their accusations then put a pressure on him. It forced his hand. And he was in a corner that he'd already painted himself in. So he tried to dodge the responsibility. Let's write this down. Pilate's avoidance did not equal innocence. Ignorance is no excuse. Pilate tried many times to avoid the situation. He tried many avenues of avoidance. He sent Jesus to Herod. He tried to release Jesus as the Passover pardon. Somewhere in the midst of the shouts to crucify Jesus, Matthew tells us that Pilate stands up and he washes his hands in front of the crowd saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood." He tried to have Jesus flogged and then released to them. Pilate did a lot to try and avoid Jesus' death, but avoidance does not equal innocence. Pilate's attempt at dodging responsibility revealed a weak character. He had painted himself into a character corner, and that corner was a weak character. And there are a few things that Pilate did that revealed this weak character. First of all, we talked about his arrogance. We don't have any notes about this, but from what I've observed of people, arrogance is typically a cover-up. Arrogance is fake confidence. Arrogance is weak. Confidence, on the other hand, is strong. Jesus exemplifies confidence throughout his whole ministry. And a spotlight is shown on the strength of Jesus' confidence in the midst of these trials. Pilate is arrogant. And this arrogance comes from a weak character. A weak character will choose to sacrifice others in order to maintain a personal position of power. Once Pilate had some level, whatever level that was, of conviction about Jesus, John says he tried from that point on to set him free. So there was some effort there. Something had changed a little bit. He still sided with the crowd because he had painted himself into a character corner. He had painted himself into a position where he wasn't going to change. He wasn't going to move. And it would have taken a very strong character to make a stand at that point. But the character corner he had painted himself into was a weak character corner. So even if there was a chance to stand up, to make a stand, to stand on his convictions, it probably wasn't going to happen because the character he had was weak. exemplified through his arrogance, and also in this decision. When he was pressured, when he was pressed, his decision was to sacrifice Jesus. Instead of taking any form of self-sacrifice to keep an innocent man alive, Pilate even says, don't you realize I have the power to set you free or to crucify you? He admits he's got the power to do something about it, but it would have required some self-sacrifice. I believe John paints a clear picture here that Pilate believed that Jesus was innocent, but Pilate would rather sacrifice an innocent man than sacrifice his personal position of power. And that's a clear sign of a weak character. Pilate's confession was in the form of a sign placed over the crucified Jesus, stating, "Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews." This was protested by the Jews, but Pilate would not change the sign. It was trilingual. It was in Latin and Aramaic and in Greek. And in this, Pilate kind of killed two birds with one stone. Definitely the first one matching up with the arrogant attitude we see in him. He's kind of thumbing his nose at the Jews. Because they come to him and they say, no, you can't print that. Because this was a legal way of saying, you know, this is the conviction. This is why this person is being crucified. So this was a bit of a legal stance. And the Jews are coming to him and saying, no, you can't print that. You can't put that up there. That's not true. He was convicted of claiming he was the king of the Jews. And Pilate's like, what I've written. You know, take that. You put me in a corner. You push me. You force my hand. I have the power to put that above his head. So it was a little bit of an arrogant thumbing of his nose at them. The second, it was at best a very weak man's way of confessing his convictions about who Jesus might have been. So let's turn the corner. What does this mean to us? What does this mean to me? Well, we look at Pilate's character, and so we have to ask ourselves, what character corner am I painting myself into? What character corner am I painting myself into? Do my daily choices paint me into a corner of character or a corner of cowardice? As we look at a man like Pilate, we have an opportunity to examine ourselves, and we should take that opportunity. What are we setting ourselves up for? Are we positioning ourselves in a place where our character will determine how we handle our convictions? Or will our convictions be silenced because we've painted ourselves into a corner of cowardice? That's a big question. And that's a big question that all of us should review on a regular basis with ourselves, because you don't get there. You don't get in the corner instantly. There's no such thing as instant character. You develop it. You develop a weak character over time, or you develop a strong character over time. You develop you paint yourself into a corner of cowardice, or you paint yourself into a corner of character, of good character. Character develops over time. Which corner are you painting yourself into? We need to ask ourselves that. What am I doing to develop my character for future decisions? Any decision we make is going to be influenced by the position you're in, by the position you've put yourself in, by the corner you've painted yourself into. Your choices build your character either towards a corner of cowardice or towards a corner of character, and that will affect your future decisions. It will affect your ability to stand on your convictions, or to wilt on them. And this next one, there have been a couple quotes already. You guys might have met her before, Norma Wilt. She's one of our newer members. She's got a rich past and history in the church. Wonderful, wonderful woman, her husband Harold. And so they're part of the preaching team. And this was her, Pilate was her assignment. So I had each member of the preaching team kind of, you research this. You know, Lisa's over here. Hers is coming up. She had Martha. And so when we get there, if that's a great sermon, you can say, great job. If it's not a great sermon, ha ha. So here's the bus. Here's you. Norma, she had some great notes on Pilate. And I stole a few of her quotes already. I mean, just verbatim from what she gave me. So, but this one in particular, I have to give credit. And if you ask me which ones, I could say, well, she gave this and this. And she probably wouldn't want me to say anything. She snuck out after first service. But this one was just such a great quote. When I read it, I was like, man, there's something rich there, but I got to think about it for a moment. And I had to kind of scratch my head on it. And it's just, it's really set with me real well. I like this quote. The end does not justify the means. The end is determined by them. That's good, isn't it? That's thick. The direction you're pointed in, that's the direction you're going to go. I used to listen to, and I need to maybe go and listen to some of his newer sermons. I haven't listened to him in a while. Mark Beeson, he's from Granger Community Church, and a great preacher. I bounce around from different preachers that I like to listen to. And one of the things he said through the years, and you'll see it pop up in different sermons, is he'll say, you're going to go in the direction your feet are pointed. And every step, you're not going to go that way. You're not going to go that way. You're going to go in the direction your feet are pointed. And that's how you get to where you are. The end doesn't justify the means. If you want a character-filled end, it means that you're going to have to use moral means to get there. You can't have a character-filled end and lack morals in your means. Character-filled means will determine a character-filled end. If you're shooting for that, you're going to go in the direction your feet are pointed. The end does not justify the means. The end is determined by them. You're going to get where you're going by the path you choose to take and the steps you choose to get there with. So write this down. I am responsible for my actions and their consequences. This is a big deal. I'm responsible for my actions and their consequences. Pilate tried to avoid responsibility. He tried so many different ways. We see this in our children. We see it in our grandchildren. We see it in other people. And we see it seems very childish. We need to look in the mirror more often because we do the very same thing. How often do I avoid responsibility? How often do I do the same thing that Pilate did? And what does it say about my character? What does it say about the character corner I've painted myself into? People have been trying to pass the buck since the beginning of time. The very first sin, Adam's approached and confronted. And what does Adam do? She did. She, that woman you gave me, she caused me to sin. And so then Eve is confronted. And what does she do? That serpent, it's his fault. It's from the beginning of time, people pass the buck. It's a sign of a strong character. It's a sign of maturity. And you're not going to grow if you're not taking responsibility for your actions and the consequences that go with that. Show some character. Also, we noted that Pilate was fine with sacrificing others to keep his position of power. So let's ask ourselves, do I more often choose self-sacrifice or the sacrifice of others? Do I more often, and just be honest with yourself, it's not going to help you. It's not going to help anyone else if you're lying to yourself. There's no one else inside your head. You and God. I hope there's no one else inside your head. But be honest with yourself. What's your go-to when you're put in a situation where you're pressured or you're pressed? Are you more likely to sacrifice someone else or to step forward and take the sacrifice yourself? That reveals a lot about our character. That reveals a lot about the character corner that we have painted ourselves into. So we can take that. That was in the form of a question. So what does this say about the strength or weakness of my character? Be honest. We saw the kind of character that this displayed in Pilate. What about us? Pilate's confession, if we even want to call it that, stated Jesus King of the Jews. But he avoided that. He avoided any kind of connection to this at a number of different ways. So I think it's very poignant, very important for us to ask ourselves, do I dodge calling Christ King in my heart and in my actions? If so, how? I don't think this is an if. I think all of us have some level of compartmentalization that happens in our life. And we're fully devoted to God here, but over here, no, I don't let God get a part of that. That's something different. I don't want him mixed up in that. I don't want him involved in that. That's mine. Whatever it is, wherever we are with that, we need to ask ourselves, do we avoid calling him king, calling Christ king in our heart, in our actions? Where does that happen? That needs to change. He is king. We can't act like, we can't claim that he's our king and do these other things on the side. That's not consistent. That's not healthy. It's not good for you. It's not good for the kingdom. It's not good for your relationship with God. And so let's take this last little note. Do I confess that Jesus is a king or my king? Pilate said, here's the king of the Jews. Do we look at Jesus and say, he's the king? He's a king. Or do we take that personally? He's my king. What character corner are you painting yourself into?